Once more unto the breach, dear friends.
Fill up the wall with our English dead.
Yeah, I guess we're back to saying it together.
Yeah, we need to say it that way.
All right. Well, we will fill up this breach, this gap in the wall, with our own dead. Or
is it
we
a gap
will
or a breach?
I think there's
a breach.
It's translated from Elizabethan. So anybody knows that translations from English to English can cause some weird things to happen. Just look at your Bible.
Yep.
Yeah. Weird things. Weird.
I have one on the shelf here. I can look at it.
What? How do you translate the word thy?
Thy?
Thy. Not thigh. Sure. Not like the leg, but like your.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean your. It's close to your. See what I mean?
Yeah,
this is the personal wealth coach where we are literally pedantic. I like using those two words together. It's redundant.
I like that. It's very good.
It's redundant
all over again.
And repetitive. Yes. So we are the personal wealth coach. Welcome to our program. This is Jake McClure, the other bald guy sitting across town from me is Jeff McClure.
I'm supposed to say that.
Okay, you say it.
Jeff McClure.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the other bald guy part. But okay, so Jeff and Jake McClure, who are related. Jake McClure is the son of Jeff McClure. And you're Jeff sure McClure that? Is the father of Jake McClure. There's some implied ownership. I honor my father only when you say it to me, it should be thy father. I do honor you. You are greatly honored. Cool. I pronounce the H. That's how much I honor you.
You can say honor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So this is the Personal Wealth Coach where we honor each other and we talk about the economy. So what are we going to talk about the economy? We got to have a whole bunch of disclosures before we can talk about the economy. Because if you talk about the economy without disclosures, people will think that you should be listened to or something.
I think we're entangled.
We are definitely relative. I don't know if it's entangled. On the quantum level. We are certainly entangled somehow.
I think so. Anyway.
So the personal wealth coach is an SEC registered investment advisor, as well as the name of this talk show. And I know this is weird. We should have a disclosure about the word show on the radio. How do you have a show? How do you show? So this talk show is registered as well through the firm with the SEC. But that doesn't mean that the SEC approves of us or anybody else for that matter. They don't approve.
It doesn't mean that this is an SEC registered talk show.
No, we don't register the show except through the firm. They know about the show. Calling it a show still hurts me somehow. Deep down, I'm using a word incorrectly, even though everybody uses it that way.
Well, if there's a talk, there should be a tick before it.
So you could have the whole clock thing going on?
Yeah.
I see what's going on there.
You used to call it a tell.
So the radio program, even though the firm is registered with the SEC to give investment advice at a fiduciary level, we can't give fiduciary advice on the air. There's violations of privacy, there's not knowing everybody we're talking to, all that good stuff. Although we may know everybody we're talking to out there, AM radio is a shadow of its former self. Now, how do you get a shadow out of AM radio? Well, go under a bridge. That static is the shadow. So AM actually does have shadows. That's a disclosure as well. So next disclosure is yours, sir. Oh, this is educational, not investment advice. It's educational. There
right,
you go.
Right. The information we present in this educational radio program could be a program.
It is a program. But does it make it not a show if it's a program?
I don't know. We'll have to delve into that. We can delve. The information we present on this educational radio program or internet program, depending on how you're listening, has been obtained from sources we deem to be reliable, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the accuracy or completeness of said information. I love to say that. I get to say deem once a week.
And warranty or guarantee in the same sentence.
Right.
How often do people get to use those words? We're trying to make them come back, but so far only lawyers are picking us up on that. All right. So we don't pay for this radio program, show, listen, tell. Is it a tell?
You used to call it a tell, but that would indicate we were gambling.
Yeah, it could be poker tells. Whatever we are on that you can hear but not see that we claim is a show, we don't pay for it. We don't pay Town Square Media. They don't pay us. Now, we do buy advertisements on the radio station for the program, as does Town Square Media. Although they don't actually pay themselves for it. They just use their own time, which seems a little bit weird if you ask me.
But we have an ulterior motive.
What's that?
The name of the radio program is the same as the name of the investment advisory firm.
That's right.
Therefore, if we say something nice on the radio program, people like it, they would like the investment advisory firm.
Yes. So you could see that we have an ulterior motive. And if you think that anybody on the radio doesn't have a motive other than to hear their own voice, well, you might be right. We do like to hear our own voice. That's another motive that we're on here. We have headphones on that let us hear our voices as we talk. You don't get to do that on the phone.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Most people get weirded out hearing their own voices. We get so used to it that we are addicted to it. So that's what we're doing.
Actually, we just don't have anything better to do on Saturday mornings.
Yes. So if you would like to join our conversation with a question, you can attempt a question on sports, but do not be surprised when the answers fly wildly in the face of reality. However, if you apply your questioning to economics, finance, that sort of thing, we actually have a realm of expertise there. If you ask us about the Super Bowl, don't be surprised if we give you hockey statistics. We are not experts in that area. But if you'd like to join our conversation, we're doing it through email. You can send an email to jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Now we're going to talk about the markets, but I have to say we have two questions hanging out there from John already. So we're going to jump into the markets. What happened this week?
Well, we followed the S&P 500 stock index. It's our preferred stock market indicator. And it rose 1.52% during the week, which is a lot. If you multiply that times 52, it comes up with a lot. Or a bunch.
Yeah,
is the case, baby.
That's all my calculators end with the word a lot on them. I type in the numbers, it comes out to a lot. Yeah.
So it closed at another record high, 4509.37. It's just kind of boring, these record highs on Fridays.
We have 50 record highs on the S&P 500 so far this year.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Nuts.
And we wrote this in the newsletter, but I think I didn't see any news articles on it. The Standard & Poor's 500 stock index has now risen 101.55% from its bottom in March 2020. It is fully doubled. So if you were thinking about getting out in March of last year, which a lot of people, apparently based on our telephone conversation with them, were thinking about bailing out of the market because they were scared and they were thinking the world was going to come to an end or something, in the shortest recession we've had in the history of the United States, we did have an official recession that lasted less than two months.
It was the gap in the middle of between these 2 months, so it covers 2 months but not completely. It's a little over a month.
What's interesting is in the second quarter when we theoretically had the recession, the GDP actually grew in the United States. And
yeah,
that's weird.
Yeah,
that doesn't make any sense.
This recession doesn't follow any rules for previous rules of recessions, but that's okay. The last one didn't either. It's all right.
And just for reference sake, and I've had some discussions with people about this, during the second quarter of last year, when our GDP actually rose a little bit, 0.1%, I think, total, the Chinese GDP fell 6.5%. They had a full-blown knock them in the teeth, serious recession, which they are not recovered from yet.
That's correct.
I'll tell you that.
That's correct.
Anyway.
And that's something that's not very well covered in the articles that I see. It's just very, because China's numbers are so suspect most of the time. Wait, I'm going to use the newest terminology, the newest slang. Is so sus. Did you know that's the, see how I shortened the word suspect to sus? That makes me cool. No.
So that makes you streetwise to know things like that?
No, it means I'm a dad. This is the terms that are being used by 6-year-olds. So I'm cool now.
Anyway, the index has risen 20.06%.
That's the S&P 500. Yeah.
Yes. Wow. That's a lot.
That's a lot. I just, and I mentioned earlier that we've had 50 records this year. In years where there are 50 or more records, the S&P 500 generally averages 23%. But there aren't that many of them, so it's kind of hard to say averaging out just a few of them. So just saying this has happened before, this kind of growth rate, this is not unprecedented. It's weird, but it's not unprecedented. Go ahead.
That's true. Anyway, the interesting thing is you read the headlines, and I was reading the headlines this week a lot and reading the stories this week in the Wall Street Journal and other places. There's all kinds of reasons that come up, that keep popping up, that the market should be plummeting into the depths. A lot of worry, which is really, really good. And there's an aphorism on Wall Street called bull markets climb a wall of worry. We've credited to John Templeton. He probably didn't come up with it originally, but in honor of John Templeton, who I respect very highly,
He said that he's the first attributable person that said it. He also said something, a deeper quote, one that I prefer even more, that is nobody else has said it. Bull markets mature, are born on pessimism, mature on optimism, and die on euphoria.
Well, I haven't seen any euphoria.
I haven't either. I see occasional optimism, but I see as much pessimism as optimism. Maybe more, maybe a little bit more, which is good.
We follow another index for the stock market. Well, it's not the whole stock market, but a piece of the stock market, which is the CRSP Mid-Cap Value Index, because we happen to like the mid-cap value asset class. It rose 2.5% for the week to close at 2514.42, also a record high, and is up 22.58% year to date. Yay! Corporate earnings keep coming in well above expectations. The CEO's forecasts keep coming in higher than expected. And the companies, as they report their earnings and the CEOs make comments during their earnings calls, they're nearly unanimous in their statements that the logistics mess is holding them back, as well as the labor mess, but they believe it will be resolved in the next 2 years.
Right. Those are key words.
There's a lot of cash trying to buy stuff from them that they don't have to sell, and they think the cash is going to stay there and wait for them to produce it so they can sell it. And my personal experience is that's true. We bought a car last week.
Do you have the car yet?
No.
So
we went to a lot. Anyway, we went to the lot where the cars, new cars, are normally set up, where we could look at a new car. They didn't have any.
Why would they have cars at a car lot? What are you thinking?
To sell them. They had some used ones, but they didn't have any. They had a few used ones, but they were selling pretty quickly. We got to actually test drive a used one of the same model. And we bought a car we have never seen, never driven. And looking back in time, I think that's ridiculous. But the fact is, it's going on all across the country right now.
Right. And in fact, many of the automobile manufacturers are liking this model of purchase better. The Wall Street Journal a week ago had an article in it about car volume sales and all that good stuff. And during a normal year, but use air quotes around normal because I don't know what normal means anymore. I don't think we ever knew. We just thought we did.
Well, we could say new normal and be cool.
Right. This is the new normal. The pink is the new black, or the black is the new pink, or the colors are now other colors for some reason.
Right.
The amount of inventory of cars that just sits on the car lots is a massive drain of money. They have to build a lot of cars, and at the end of the year, they always have these big car sales. Everybody's aware of these things. We've heard them, seen them on TV. It's not as bad as the ads for like the monster truck rally, Sunday, 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 but it's up there. In fact, you might hear Sunday said three times in a car advertisement at the end of the year to get the cars off the lot. Well, Ford has come out, and General Motors have come out, but Ford has done it officially in saying, we would like to go to the online purchase model that you maybe go to our dealership and order it at the dealership and get it in a few weeks. And this is exciting. It's really cool for the manufacturers. If they can do that, it will save them a lot of money. There's financing that takes place at the dealership level. The dealership is not owned by the manufacturer. And so they have to get a big loan to hold the stuff that they have on their lot. Now, they usually have pretty good financing rates, but it's still an expense just to have it.
And what's really crazy, it's called a floor loan, and there's no floor in their lot.
Exactly. It's called because you go inside, you got the floor that people put cars on for some reason. My mom would never let me bring the car on the floor. I don't know.
Right.
But car dealerships have different mothers, I guess. Anyway, what this means is that could be an amazing new way of purchasing. And if it works, that's great. And if there's a percentage of people that do it, that's great. But I've gotten the privilege, with a question mark, of being able to look at car dealership accounting books when they put big inflatable gorillas on their roofs.
Does it help?
Yeah. Like 20% improvement in sales. What this says is something that behavioral finance folks have known for a long time.
And that behavior is that inflatable gorillas increase sales.
Yes, obviously. Inflatable gorillas will increase sales. Free balloons will cause you to buy a $30,000 car.
So you should put one on the Wall Street, on 44 Wall Street, on top of the exchange. We should put an inflatable gorilla.
Exactly. So what that means is that car and home purchases, sadly, tend to be impulse decisions. We'll just have to wait and see if you can make an impulse decision to buy a car and then wait the 2 weeks for the car to be delivered. If that is still an impulse thing, how do you put an inflatable gorilla on your computer, though?
I think I could do it.
YouTube? Yeah, you could just...
Computers keep getting smaller. It'd be a very small...
Very small inflatable gorilla. Yeah. So anyway, back to the market. I just thought that was a nice little thing to throw in there, in that this is a big deal.
Well, there's an anomaly going on, but there's always an anomaly going on. The yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury actually climbed. For 3 weeks, it had been falling, and it rose 3.65% to 1.307%. Yay! Woo-hoo. I remember when 10-year Treasuries typically were around 6%, and then they were 3%, and we thought that was low. Now they're 1.3, and we think it's much better than it was. Now,
it's better than 0.5% what it was just not that long ago.
Right, about a year ago. If you bought a 10-year treasury, you get 0.5% a year on the investment. By the way, if you bought a 10-year treasury a year ago and you went to sell it today, you get less than you paid for it. That's true. Something important to remember. You have to wait 10 years to get the money. But 1.3% is still less than expected inflation during the period. So we still have effectively negative interest rates on treasuries, which is interesting. It's one of those things we talked about this week, too, and it's something that we could go on. We could talk for 2 hours about why interest rates are so low. It's fascinating.
And when still not rise cover, if they'll rise. Still not cover the whole field. Yeah.
Now, crude oil behaved very differently this week.
Yeah, it was lying around in its barrels.
It was, but it jumped.
Jumping crude oil, Batman.
It jumped 10.31% to $68.67 a barrel, which is in the trading range it's been in. It's no big thing because of Ida.
Yeah.
Not Idaho, mind you.
The hurricane.
Yes.
I think we should be politically correct and say occasionally Himicane.
Well, since every other one has a man's name, we should call half of them Himicanes and half of them hurricanes.
Or I think what we should do is, instead of having typhoons on one part of the globe and hurricanes on the other part of the globe, we should just call them hurricanes and himicanes. And then they can have all the boy names and we can have all the girl names.
Well, the market is a leading economic indicator. It says all is well.
All is well.
All is well and likely to be well for some time.
New Orleans is getting ready to evacuate for the same reason. And this is why the price of oil went up. Because people are like, maybe somebody's going to drive a little more, or maybe there's refining that takes place in the is that a refined area?
There's also a lot of offshore oil platforms that normally produce oil, that supply side of things.
Yeah, so the
stopping production of oil,
right? And that's not as big as far as the percentage of demand, but it still has an impact. It's really, though, all the refineries that have to shut down. That's the big thing, because that's going to delay everything. And Houston's likely to shut down the refineries because it takes more than turning a switch to turn those things off. It'd be nice if it was just one switch. Just don't let the janitor near that switch. But it takes about a day or 2 days to shut down a refinery. And if Ida decides to take a left instead of a right, this has been known to happen. Hurricanes are really bad at following instructions from the weather service. I don't know why. It's written very clearly with glaringly large bands to pass through. When I'm following Google Maps, I can do a lot better than any hurricane. But what we're saying is that the hurricane may head over to Houston. So Houston's going to have to shut down refineries. We're also going to have to shut down liquid natural gas export facilities. So you should see oil rising everywhere and the price of energy rising everywhere, including Europe and Russia and so on. So,
well, now it's time for questions.
Yes.
We've got two questions, and you can add to those two questions by emailing us at either Jeff@tpwc.com or Jake@tpwc.com. You can send it to both of us. We want both of us to read it.
That's actually preferable. We can both be looking at it. Okay.
We can be entangled and see them in stereo.
John, you're an amazing person, but you have just done the most dangerous thing possible. You have asked the personal wealth coach, Bald Guys, to prognosticate. He says PWC prognostications as the subject line. Does he not know how dangerous that is? We could spend 2 hours just talking. Oh, wait, we do that already. Okay. So what are your predictions for these three scenarios? And he's got a picture. This is very traditional at this point. A paper version of the Wall Street Journal with a digital picture of it emailed to us with an outline around what he would like us to look at. So the outline, this is the quote from the Wall Street Journal. Three vital issues for investors remain uncertain as the Federal Reserve moves towards tapering its bond buying. How often do you say tapering when you say, I'm going to cut back a little bit? How often do you just as a day-to-day? Is this right up there with deeming?
Yeah.
Okay. I think so. All right. So will this quantitative tightening mean Treasury yields go up or down? I have an answer for you on that. The answer is yes. Will stocks do better with rising or falling bond rate yields? Yes. No. Both of those. Okay. And a linked issue is the stock-bond relationship that is held for the past three decades going into reverse. Okay. So that last question, we'll hold that to last. Let's actually answer these questions with some seriousness rather than the yes and no question answers that we're doing. Will this quantitative tightening mean Treasury yields go up or down? What do you think?
I think quantitative tightening will cause... That's an interesting term. I think it would cause longer-term investment, longer-term interest rates to rise.
Yeah, and I agree with that. We were just talking about this prior to the program, the show. The Fed buying bonds at the rate that it has. It before the pandemic, it had about $2.5 trillion. Now it's got about $5.5 trillion U.S. Treasuries. When you buy bonds and you buy a lot of bonds, like $3 trillion worth of bonds, you cause interest rates to go down. Because if you, and this is just kind of take a step back and say, all right, when you're going to get a mortgage, if you've got good credit, so that's the first assumption, you've got great credit, you're like in the 800 range, 820 even, you're going to go get a loan. If you have 15 banks that all want to give you a loan that you can choose the best rate between, or tell them that bank over there is offering me this, are you going to get a higher or lower rate? You're going to get a lower rate because you've got good competition. They all want to give you a loan. Now, you still have good credit, but let's try a different scenario where there's not a lot of money out there to loan out. People aren't buying bonds like crazy anymore. So you only have four or five banks willing to give you this big loan. You're still going to get a pretty good interest rate, but it's probably going to be not quite as nice as the low interest rate you got when there's 15 banks. So the Federal Reserve represents the 15 banks, the big bank mentality, because they've been buying these bonds from banks and from holders of this debt, flushing cash into the system. When that cash is not being flushed in so much, we're going to see interest rates go up. Now, will it be a smooth trend? No, that's not how interest rates work, but we can average it out over a long period of time to see a rising interest rate when there's less people buying bonds. And the Federal Reserve represents a lot of people buying bonds all at the same time. So we expect Treasury yields to go up with the Fed stopping its purchases or tapering its purchases.
But I want to emphasize something. I agree with the article, which is in the Wall Street Journal, written by James McIntosh. I agree with his conclusion. It's, we don't know. We really don't know. Because despite the fact if the Fed stops buying so many bonds, and interest rates start up just a little bit, as they did, by the way, last week when the chairman of the Fed suggested they were going to maybe this year stop buying so many bonds.
Right.
a bunch of people, as soon as they get a little higher interest rate, rush in and buy some more bonds.
Did you say Russian? The Russians are doing it.
Rush in. Well, maybe the Russians are doing it.
Could be. No, they aren't. They're not. But go ahead.
But the point is, as interest rates go, if interest rates do go up, that will cause more people to want to buy bonds. For example, let me give you an example. The competition with the 10-year U.S. Treasury bond is the 10-year Bund in Germany.
Bund.
It's the second Bund. Bund. The Bund. Bund yes. Or Bund?
I say Bund just because it sounds like a cake.
Oh, I thought it was a Bund, but it could be.
It could be a Bund. I'm not suggesting that I speak German. They don't even call it German there. That's how badly I speak German. I still call it German. They don't even call it that.
They don't even know what country they're in. They think they're in Deutschland.
Yeah, what is that? They are clearly in Germany.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they all speak German there, or they'd have no one to talk to.
The yield, if you loan your money to the German government for 10 years, they will gladly allow you to pay them 0.53% a year for 10 years.
You will loan to them and pay them for the privilege of doing so.
Right. They have a negative yield on their bonds.
Basically, and the way they do that, by the way, you don't actually have to write them a check from your bank account every month. What they do is they subtract some money from your principal.
Yeah. Basically, they will charge you 0.53% a year for 10 years to hold your money, to use your money for their purposes, and then they'll give it back to you, but they'll give you back less than you put in.
Yes.
And they guarantee it.
The part that they give back to you is guaranteed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is very good.
Yeah.
It's a good way to avoid taxes, though, by the way.
Yeah, you don't have to pay taxes on any gains, so you don't have to pay.
Because you don't have any gains.
Right. Isn't that great? I think I've got a tax plan for everybody. If you don't want to pay taxes, stop working. Just don't make any money.
So if some billionaire or the government or something says, I got this money and I want to save it for 10 years, I don't want to use it for, I want to have it available to me at the same value or better, 10 years from now, you give the money to the German government. The absolute security, both governments are considered to be quite secure. Both of them are AAA rated at 10 years. So if they go to the German government and give them that, they're guaranteed to get back less money than they put in. If they go to the American government and give it to us, they are guaranteed to get more money, more dollars than they put in. And this is an interesting point. Even though it's a negative yield to maturity, because of the fact the dollar has been, here's another thing, kind of like fill up the wall with our English did, bullish.
The dollar, it's been bullish.
It's been rising. And it looks like it probably will continue to stay up. If you put money in at the beginning, at the beginning of this year into a treasury, your interest rates at the beginning of this year were 0.91%, so they weren't very good. But still, you've seen a 3% rise in the value of the dollar that you have in the treasury if you were German.
Yeah. So you've had a currency return that is a gain while your yield has been a slight gain, but your yield to maturity is negative.
It gets very complicated.
It is. Sadly, it's quite complicated.
Which is why forecasting interest rates is a fool's game, and I don't want to be a fool, so I'm not going to forecast interest rates. I do think, though.
Wait a minute. When has being a fool's game stopped us in the past?
It hasn't, and I'm about to become a fool.
All right, here we go. Step forward boldly, my fool.
As the economy continues to recover and we get on a roll, over the next decade or so, interest rates will rise.
So
if we're talking about 10-year treasuries, we're talking about a decade.
I'm just as foolish as you. I agree with that.
But I don't know.
We don't know. In fact, this is how badly we don't know. 10 years ago, we were saying the same thing. About the last 10 years.
We're consistent.
Yeah. So we're looking at, and people are like, how can you be doubling down when you just said you've been saying this for 10 years? You're obviously wrong. What's going on? Well, we've been saying it for 10 years because interest rate cycles tend to last about 40 years, and this one's gone about 45. So when we look at that, we say we're due for interest rates to go up, and it could happen at any moment.
It's kind of like, it's like being on the Gulf, and I actually know some people I've advised on the Gulf to not live right on the Gulf of Mexico in the New Orleans area.
It's beautiful down there. Why would you say that? Look how beautiful it is, and you can walk on the oil. No, that's the beach. That's tar on the beach. Sorry.
They don't have tar on the beach much anymore.
Not as much as they used to, but after a good hurricane. you know, the nostalgia's back.
But they love living there next to the ocean, and they think they're safe, and it's all cool. And I say, the ocean is rising, whether you think it's man-made or not, it's rising. B, the hurricanes are getting stronger, so you have a probability that if you live there for 30 years, you have a high probability that sometime during that 30 years, you'll get hit with a hurricane.
Yes. Yes.
And so we can't predict which of the 30 years the hurricane, or which of all the years the hurricanes are going to come in. But I can tell you that if you live on the Gulf, hurricanes are a real threat. If you live here in Central Texas, tornadoes are a threat. If you live in California, earthquakes are a threat. I forecast an earthquake for California.
Oh, there you go. You have now made a forecast. You didn't say the gauge of earthquake or when it would occur. So therefore, you and Nostradamus are both vague prognosticators.
That should be my title.
I am the firm's vague prognosticator. Thank you. That's on my card here. What do you do? I prognosticate vaguely. The future is, I imagine August of next year in Texas being hot. Quite a prognostication.
That's a pretty fair, high probability.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just a statistical prognosticator. That's what we do. We got another question from John, though.
Yeah, it's on the same subject.
It's on the same subject, but this is one where the Wall Street Journal made a boo-boo. Did you catch it?
I didn't see it. I didn't read the article.
All right. So the article is, the question is, how can both dollar strengths be dangerous? And he's got quotes around dangerous. Okay. I'm not sure. Okay. So let's read the, I'm going to read the paragraph before the one he's got circled and then the circled one. It's about Norway. This article is about Norway and their central bank. And so it says, Norway's central bank is likely to be the next developed country to follow South Korea's lead. Well, what did South Korea do? They raised interest rates this week. So that's some background context. South Korea's central bank raised interest rates. This is the first time that an industrialized nation has raised interest rates after the pandemic began. Okay. And for similar reasons. So this is the Norway's central bank is likely to be the next to follow South Korea for similar reasons. Okay. Norges Bank left its key rate at zero when policymakers met this month, but said they are likely to move in September. What that means is they're likely to go up in September, not just move. But so. All right. So here's the circled portion. Unlike many other central banks, including the Federal Reserve. Okay, we got a big boo-boo here. Norges Bank is charged by lawmakers with using its interest rate to limit the risk of asset price bubbles and other threats to the financial system. Federal Reserve is mandated with the same thing. The Federal Reserve is gathering mandates. It was given an original mandate, which was just one at the very beginning with the Federal Reserve Act. But the Dodd-Frank Act, after the Great Recession, mandated the Federal Reserve try to prevent bubbles and panics. So the Wall Street Journal, probably an older writer that doesn't remember that laws have changed since the Great Recession. But it's,
that's age discrimination.
It is. I'm sorry. I am discriminating against those that are aged and infirm.
Are you talking about me?
No, I'm not actually. All right. I give you much honor. So they've got the same goal that the Federal Reserve does at the Central Bank of Norway, which is to keep inflation around 2%. Norway is in good shape, as is Denmark. Most of Scandinavia is in pretty good shape. Their biggest export is actually export. They ship exports. And there's a great demand for that right now. Their economy is doing fantastically. South Korea's economy is doing fantastically, and it's much smaller than the United States economy. The Federal Reserve has to deal with parts of our economy doing fantastically well at the same time that parts of our economy are rotting from gangrene.
That's a bit extreme.
It's not hyperbole. I mean, hyperbole would be using the word crash when talking about the stock market, so I'm allowed to say gangrene. Part of our economy is really not in good shape, and part of our economy is in great shape. So the Federal Reserve, don't expect them to raise rates expect them to mildly stop buying bonds. So slow down the bond purchases instead of stopping the bond purchases. Where Norway, Denmark, South Korea, Singapore, I don't have any doubt that they're likely to all be raising interest rates in the future because their economies are focused in areas that are doing fantastically well. They don't have a lot of drag. And that means that money's flowing in like crazy and inflation is going to start really taking off. And they don't have a currency backer like the dollar. And Norway's currency issues are interesting, guys. If you ever want to get confused, start looking at what currencies are taken in Norway. There are multiple different types of kroners that are used there. There are dollars and there are euros. So inflation's a different game there. So just keep that in mind. How can both dollar strengths be dangerous? And I'm trying to figure out that question in the middle of this. The next circle is almost nothing about this remains true, and we may now live in a world where a strong dollar is as dangerous as a weak dollar. Okay, so that's the statement. The reality is that strong dollar and weak dollar is purely psychological. If people have for years said that there are, you know, we want the dollar to be strong, and we've said there's dangers around having a strong dollar. It means our exports are more expensive. You can understand why if you want to sell something to someone, having a higher price for it just because it's in dollars might be bad for business. Having a weak dollar is bad for imports, and we are a net importer. We import more stuff than we export stuff if you don't count dollars in that mix, if you don't count intellectual property in that mix. So for us, a weak dollar is much better than a strong dollar, but it comes with other risks. That means that we would be buying a lot more than we're selling, even more than we already are.
But yeah. I just wanted to say, if you got any questions about this, about Jake just said we import more stuff than we export, and we've been doing that for now 40 years. And for 40 years, many economists have been saying, or not actually economists, would-be economists, pseudo-economists have been saying it's going to bankrupt the country because we're spending a lot of money and buying stuff, and we don't have money coming in. We should be exporting more stuff.
Well, the reality is that
we're far better off.
Yeah, we make stuff inside our country and use it and consume it in our country. And if you think about it, if you're just buying water and putting it into a tank, and you're buying more water than you're letting out of your tank, you're putting in more than you put out, eventually your tank will explode because you can't.
Or at least overflow.
And you can't compare it directly. The United States economy, when we say consumption, it's literal. We're consuming it as fast as we're buying it in a lot of cases. There's other things that we're buying that stick around, and we'll probably cover it some more after the commercial. So we're going to play some. We'll be back. If you'd like to join our conversation, the email addresses in here are jeff@tpwc.com and jake@tpwc.com. That's the personal wealth coach or Tango Papa Whiskey Charlie, and we'll be back on the other side of these commercials. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jake and
Jeff.
I almost said your name instead of my own. Just we're the McClures.
We're entangled.
Yeah, we're the McClures. We are the bald folks giving you economic conversation. We gave an example earlier where you were talking about how someone in Germany buying a bond from the United States had a positive return even above the interest rate because of currency shifts, because right. The currency rate is up. The article that was sent in for that last question mentions that as a risk as well, because the opposite end of that is dangerous. If we see someone that has borrowed in dollars that are living overseas rather than loaning in dollars. So if you're in Germany and you buy a bond, you're loaning money to the government of the United States if it's a U.S. Treasury bond. If you are instead taking a loan from a bank in dollars and you're making your income in euros, your loan
or kroners,
kroners actually have gone the other way against the dollar. So they're stronger against the dollar right now, while the euro is weaker against the dollar. Your payment's gone up.
Yep.
Because of currency. And the end of this article talks about $13 trillion of loans, in dollar-denominated loans, to people outside the United States, by people outside the United States, or sometimes by people in the United States. So lots of loans have been given in dollars to people that don't use dollars, and that makes it more expensive to pay it back when the dollar gets strong. So this kind of answers why it's good to have, why it's dangerous to have a strong or weak.
I guess maybe the bank would want to loan in dollars so they could get more money back rather than loaning in euros or something like that. But why would a person who lives in Germany, doing something in Germany, want to borrow dollars
to
do something?
To buy oil.
Oh, yeah. Well, we kind of have a monopoly on that, don't we?
Yeah. So dollars are really the major currency to buy oil with, to buy energy in general. The energy markets are dominated by dollars. And if you're living in Germany and you're buying energy, you're buying natural gas from Russia, you don't buy in rubles, you don't buy in euros, you buy in dollars.
And the Russians don't like that.
No, they don't like it. But they also know that's the only way to sell energy. Why is it that they don't say, well, just you're going to have to pay us in rubles? Because the Europeans would say, no, your currency fluctuates like mad. We're going to have all kinds of weird problems paying for our stuff if we don't know what the currency is going to be. Wait, am I talking about the ruble or the Bitcoin?
Yeah, I got you.
So this is why the euro folks don't want to buy oil in rubles. They also don't want to buy it in euros because, believe it or not, they don't make a lot of oil in Europe.
They don't?
No. So you tend to buy it from the people who make it or pull it out of the ground. I know that's weird.
And they want dollars because they think dollars are cool. They think dollars are cool.
Yeah, so this is part of the reason why we see the loan issues different. There's also quite a lot of debt held by foreigners in dollar-denominated stuff, loans to the U.S. government, of about $7.8 trillion. So this is the opposite. That's the good side. They're getting paid more when the dollar rises. We're not paying more to them. If that's not complicated, I don't know how to warp your brain enough. We actually have the same payment from the government going out to them, and they are getting more money than we're paying them.
Because dollars are cool.
Yeah, because
and the cool kids all want to have dollars.
Now that flips. If the dollar drops, they get less money back. So when you're using dollars, whether the dollar's going up or down elsewhere doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all. You get paid the same dollar back that you gave in. So currency adds a layer of complexity. That is a minor understatement. You get really complexified if you start using foreign currencies to buy or borrow dollars to make loans or to give or to pay loans back.
We kind of got that subject, I think, nailed down.
Yeah, I think we have kicked this long deceased canine enough times.
Canine?
Yeah, you stop.
Equine.
You kick the dead horse or let sleeping dogs lie. I'm just mixing my metaphors here. That's all I'm doing.
Cool.
So
hey,
you know, go ahead. You go ahead.
I wanted to change the subject and say something that's I thought fascinating economically, and you have to be an economic geek to really appreciate this, but we're having this labor shortage in the United States, trying to find people to work in manufacturing, we talked to a plumber yesterday because we need some plumbing work done, and he says he couldn't do it because he doesn't have any assistance anymore because he can't find anybody he can hire who wants to crawl under a house after a broken sewer to fix a broken sewer pipe for some reason.
I was at the car shop 2 days ago and yesterday. I had an appointment at 4 o'clock 2 days ago, and I showed up for my appointment, and they said, no, you made this online. We're going to have to cancel it. And I said, you guys have been sending me texts for the last 4 hours to make sure I make it to my appointment. What's going on? I said, we only have two people working here.
Yeah.
And the computer is making these appointments, and we can't stop it.
Ah, so the computers are taking over.
Yeah, the computers are taking over.
What I wanted to point out is we're having this problem in the United States, and we try to relate it to the government paying $300 a month extra to unemployment and unemployment being too high. By the way, there is apparently so far, the states that have cut the unemployment payments have not seen an increase in employment.
That's true. It's across the board.
By the way, the best increase in employment has been seen in states that didn't cut the unemployment payments, which makes no sense. But that's reality. But I wanted to say something that I think is really fascinating. This is going on literally all over the world. The Chinese, right now, we've got one of the reasons that the prices are going up and you can't get parts is because Chinese factories are having trouble producing the goods and services, the goods that we order from them that they are contracted to produce. And their reason is that, let me read this from the Wall Street Journal. Labor shortages are materializing across China as young people shun factory jobs and more migrant workers stay home. That could be written about the United States.
I don't want to work in a factory.
So the people, China is already running into a labor shortage, just like we are. And Europe is running into a labor shortage. So whatever it is, it's causing problem with hiring people to do things, low wage jobs in factories and relatively low wage jobs in service. Is not just in the United States. It's absolutely global. And by the way, if you figure out exactly what's causing it and how to fix it, write it up real thoroughly, put a lot of footnotes on it, and you get a Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Because nobody can figure this thing out.
There's a lot of working hypotheses, but they keep running into brick walls. Like, if you stop brick walls.
A working hypothesis running into a brick wall. Now, there is a vision.
I am mixing. Bam. At my job today, you're the vague prognosticator. I am the mixer of metaphors.
Aha.
Grandmaster mixer of metaphors. That's what I am.
They're having, by the way, to interrupt you early.
You're allowed to. You're my dad.
They're having the same problem in China. Listen, this is again from the Wall Street Journal. Some migrant workers are worried about catching COVID in cities or factories. Other young people gravitating towards service industry jobs that pay more or less demanding and have air conditioning.
Whoa! Why would you want air conditioning? I mean, what is that?
That could be written. I mean, it's just like China, which we think of as being some alien culture that's completely different from ours, is having exactly the same problems. You could write the same paragraph about labor force in the United States, and it'd be true. And they don't even have unemployment benefits in China.
I could tell you something else. We can go zoological here. If you give a rat a choice between staying outside on a hot day and performing menial labor for food, or sitting in air conditioning performing something that it considers pleasurable for food, which do you think, just hypothesize for me, because we've got actual evidence on this, which do you think it will prefer to do, the air conditioning or the hot?
It will go for the air conditioning, but we've got a solution to that in the United States.
What's that?
Hire a lawyer.
Hire a lawyer.
Lawyers prefer to do demeaning, difficult work under stressful conditions.
I didn't think of that. We got to get them in the factories and on the fields.
You heard that joke about lawyers where the NIMH, National Institutes of Health, started hiring a lot of lawyers. You know why?
Because the rats wouldn't stand still for
things,
the...
There's some things you just can't get rats to do.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Yeah.
Sorry, any attorneys out there. That's lawyer jokes.
Sorry,
like
not sorry. If you're an attorney, you signed up for it.
Send in some investment advisor jokes and we'll quote them.
Yeah. Oh, or economist jokes. There's a lot of those. We can say, on the other hand. So three economists went hunting. And I know hunting is not as PC as it used to be, but most of us still eat meat. So we're just going to go with this. Three economists went hunting. They saw a beautiful buck, lots of points, probably 14 points up there. And we're almost out of time. We got to finish that joke next hour. That's the cliffhanger. If you'd like to contact us off the air, we've got voicemail rating at 947-1111 or 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com. Listen to the radio program in the past. Contact us. You can email us Jeff at tpwc.com or Jake at tpwc.com. Next hour, I'll finish the joke.